Tweet at Today SOR.
Sean, I'm sorry, but Liz O'Donnell in the new job sounds like the old politicians being looked after again, Donal. I think that's in Cork, that message. I think she would see it as an act of public service. But however, later today, relatives of the men and women who fought in the Easter Rising in 1916 will meet the Minister for Arts, Heritage and the Gaeltacht, Heather Humphreys, to oppose the proposed demolition of a number of buildings in Moore Street in Dublin, which they say were at the heart of the Rising. And they also say they've been ignored by the government in the plans to commemorate 1916. I'll be speaking shortly in studio to James Connolly Herron, a great grandson of James Connolly. But first, Valerie Cox is here. Valerie, you've been speaking with some other relatives.
Yes, Sean. And these people are very close to the leaders of 1916. To give you an idea of who they are, obviously we've got James here, but they include Noel Scarlett, who's the great nephew of Pádraig Pearse, Helen Litton, the great niece of Thomas Clark, Pat McDermott, the great nephew of Sean McDermott, Mary Gallagher, the great niece of Eamon Kiant, Lucille Redmond, a great granddaughter of Thomas McDonough, Pronshees O'Rahilly, a grandson of the O'Rahilly, and Honor O'Brolcon, who is a great niece of Joseph Plunkett. And to give some perspective of where these people are coming from, Honor and Pronshees described how their relatives were involved in the Rising.
My connection to the whole Moore Street campaign is through my granduncle, Joseph Plunkett, who was a signatory to the 1916 proclamation and a military deviser of the Rising. But my other two granduncles, his brothers, George and Jack Plunkett, were also in Moore Street, also there in the GPO and at the surrender. But I was blissfully unaware of all that and of the Moore Street connection until meeting up with Jim Connolly Herron, a great man for very, very badly needed campaigns, who insisted that I come along to Moore Street and realise what was happening. It was a most extraordinary moment, and by then I had started really reading around the whole subject and reading my grandmother's texts. And in that, sure enough, Moore Street was everywhere, and the extraordinary connections with George Plunkett on a barricade at one end and Jack Plunkett in the yards at the other end of this particular terrace of 16 houses, and in the middle, Joe Plunkett sitting on James Connolly's bed when they were both dying and both trying to consider what would happen now in the surrender.
My name is Pronshees O'Rahilly. I'm a grandson of the O'Rahilly, Michael Joseph O'Rahilly, who was the original founder of the Volunteers. It was founded 100 years ago in the Winds Hotel, and also was a treasurer of arms with the Volunteers. He subsequently was down in Limerick the day before the Rising on Owen McNeill's orders, trying to cancel the Rising, actually, and trying to give people a reason why the Rising has been cancelled. And people found it hard that they had to cancel it, not go through with it. Having said that, he drove back in his own car and old Dion Bouton to Herbert Park to get into his bed, only to be woken early in the morning by Desmond Fitzgerald, who was Gareth's father, whom just said to him, look, it started, so you might as well come in. And so he got out of bed, and as he said, I've wound the clock, so it's my duty to go in to hear it strike. He entered the GPO and met both Pearse and Connolly, and he took over as treasurer inside the building. And the first thing he did was gather all the valuables in the building, i.e. cash, stamps, etc., and put them in a main safe in the area, and he was the only key holder.
So, Valerie, why then are people, clearly they have a very strong affinity with the event, the events of 1916, but why are they so angry with the government's plans for the commemoration?
Well, Sean, there's two things here. First of all, they say they've been ignored by the government in the preparations. And the main thing, the proposed demolition of three houses in Moore Street, which they claim were at the heart of the Rising. Patrick Cooney is the PRO for the relatives. Now, he's not a descendant of the 1916 group, but he's from a Republican family whose grandfather was a member of the London Irish Volunteer Battalion, and he first realised that the Moore Street houses were set for demolition.
I was stunned when I realised that a committee had been set up. There was all sorts of worthies on it, writers, historians. Not one relative had been asked to be on this committee.
It's just farcical. Now, apart from the relatives, even the descendants haven't been written to in any way. Have they been in touch with us to ask what do we think? I think leaving it to the last second, and rushing it through is not going to help anybody.
I think it's a question of what we're commemorating. It's not just a question of a military action on the streets. That's not the point. The point is the Proclamation of Independence, written as one of the great documents of the world, written in terms of liberty and of justice and of colonies and the abolition of colonies, and how the other colonies took this on board and said, if you can do it, so can we. And that was a crucial moment, not just in Ireland's history, but in the history of the world.
So, Honour O'Brolochan there. So, as you said, Valerie, two issues, the state of the houses and also the lack of consultation as they see it with regard to the commemoration. But first of all, talk to me about the houses a bit more. What condition are they in now?
Well, we've got the photographs of them there, Sean. And as you can see, four of the houses have been saved, but they are derelict. And this is Patrick Cooney. They visited the houses and this is how they found them.
They're in appalling state. Because this is part of a development where the developers have been buying up for the last 10 years and leaving various things derelict.
Gaps.
All the way from Parnell Street, Henry Street, Moore Street.
The condition of the houses, derelict. We walked into them. We went into the Council of War Room. I pushed my hand against the rear wall and it was sodden. The walls were dripping with rain. It had rained the day before. The floorboards were rotten. The entire area smelt of decay. In 2007, the buildings were declared a national monument, and between then and 2013, when we visited with the relatives, they had become derelict.
It's a total disgrace. There are a few bars in propping up the walls, and the fence around my garden is bigger and stronger.
No roof?
No roof. Tarpaulin, flooded Niagara Falls falling down inside the walls. The windows have been replaced, with some of them, with PVC. There's a gap between them.
Pretty sorry sight right enough, looking at the picture you brought to studio. Now, Heather Humphreys, Valerie, the minister with responsibility for all this, has said that 1916 belongs to everyone. So what's the relative's position?
Well, to some extent, they agree with this. Now, Patrick Cooney certainly doesn't.
Yeah. 1916 doesn't belong to everybody.
No.
1916 belongs to people who want to commemorate and celebrate and honour the men and women who went out and fought and gave their lives.
Absolutely.
And also, the proclamation, as Honour says, is essential. It's plastered up everywhere, but how many people actually read that document?
Mm. I just couldn't believe how many people are ignorant to what went on Moore Street and in the houses. There's very few people actually know that the garrison of 300 people were housed on that terrace. And when my father brought me in there to do a bit of shopping around, because my mother loved the traders, and I hope they stay forevermore, because they're characters, he drummed through my head the importance of those buildings on the terrace.
I would say, in fact, that 1916 belongs to everybody in the terms that commemoration and what it does and what it's meant to serve. So it serves to create memory as much as it commemorates.
And that's Honour O'Brolochan again there, Valerie, and before her, Patrick Cooney and Prunchius O'Rahilly. So I suppose the question that is obviously arising from all this, will the families be taking part in the government-organised commemorations?
Well, we don't know, because that depends on the meeting this evening. And it depends entirely on what the minister says to them when they give her their demands.
My family will anyway, and anybody, I could safely say that all the families will. I mean, the celebrations are going to go ahead one way or another. I don't think the government realise how many people from all over the world are watching this whole thing develop, and who are so interested in the Moore Street area now that they know a bit of the history of it, and certainly the diaspora. And I'm glad to say that Jimmy Deanahan's new portfolio is diaspora.
There isn't any question of the relatives abstaining or refusing. No. The relatives, after all, are the ones who will be celebrating, if you like, commemorating and noticing. But it's up to the government to make it such that it will be something for the state to be proud of, and something that will make it clear that they're representing the people, not the people they think are there, but the people who really are there.
I think the relatives will take part if they're treated with the respect and dignity that they deserve. We are putting an ultimatum on the table. We have all of the evidence to provide the minister with. And we need to say, will she actually stand up and say, I freeze the order, We need to investigate further.
So that's Patrick Cooney finishing that report. Thanks for that, Valerie Cox. And as I say, with me in studio, James Connolly Heron, a great grandson of James Connolly, one of the signatories of the proclamation and who was executed in the aftermath of the Rising. And also on the line, Professor Mary Daly, UCD historian and a member of the Expert Advisory Committee. First of all, James Connolly Heron, Patrick Cooney, they're talking about an ultimatum. Explain or tell us a bit more about that.
Well, there are two issues. One is the failure of the government to produce a programme to celebrate or commemorate the centenary of the Rising. And the other is the ongoing dispute over what's happening down in Moore Street, which was the last refuge and the last headquarters of the provisional government in 1916. As you've heard from that report, the current state of the National Monument is a disgrace. It has been allowed to fall into disrepair and decay over the under the ownership of chartered land. Chartered land have been NAMID. So effectively the state have financial control over what's going to happen down there. The National Museum, our National Museum, have described the area as the most important historical site in modern Irish history. And yet it has been allowed to descend into what appears to be a shanty town.
What do you want done with it?
Well, there must be immediate government or state intervention to ensure that all buildings associated, connected or directly associated with the evacuation from the GPO in the area are preserved and held, not allowed to deteriorate any further. The state must ensure that the evacuation route from the GPO is preserved and kept intact. A restoration programme must be implemented in time for the centenary.
Has anyone costed any of this?
Well, there are funds being set aside, we are told now. NAMA funding to the tune of 6 million have been set aside for the restoration of four buildings.
That sounds like a plan.
It's a plan of sorts, but unfortunately, the base upon which that plan will evolve will be that the entire area around those four buildings will be obliterated. So we will lose effectively the last extant 1916 battlefield in the
city.
Yes,
but you'll have the four houses and lots of money, and clearly it's needed as well to have them restored. And then, of course, the GPO itself is already very well preserved, and presumably adjustments can be made there as well. So would it not be sufficient to have those four houses put right and a plaque and other commemorative notice being put in place?
Well, this takes us along to the second point about the lack of a programme for the commemoration, for the centenary commemorations. We've promoted the idea of a centenary project, and that would include the development of a historic cultural quarter in the Moore Street GPO Moore Street area. We should remember that the 1916 leaders were not just military figures, they were cultural figures. They played their part in the cultural revival of the nation. And we feel that the creation of an historic cultural quarter in the GPO Moore Street would be a fitting tribute to the memory of those of what remain our golden generation.
And what about the role of the relatives in all of this? What exactly are you looking
for? Well, there's great disquiet among the relatives in general in relation to the lack of a programme, the drawing up of a programme. We don't know what's been planned for the centenary. There's been little or no meaningful negotiation with the relatives. A lot of the relatives feel marginalised. There have been changes made arbitrary changes made, for instance, to the Arbor Hill ceremonies, the annual Arbor Hill ceremonies, that are causing disquiet among relatives. The GPO ceremony, the Easter ceremony each year, the GPO, the wreath-laying ceremony, over the past number of years, relatives have felt they've been marginalised, they're not being included, that the members of the public are being pushed further and further back, and that the commemoration ceremony is almost becoming privatised.
Okay, stay on the line, because as I say, we have Mary Daly as well. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean.
Now, you, probably come under the general heading of one of the all sorts of worthies who have been included in this advisory committee. I don't know whether you take that as a derogatory comment or whatever, but what about the exclusion, it would appear, of the relatives?
Well, I think there's a number of issues here. I think more generally, we don't know whether they're included or excluded because we don't have a programme at the moment. I would share what has been said about the absence of a programme. I mean, we on the advisory committee have been asking for the government to present a programme. I've no very strong views in as to the details, but until a programme is put up there for discussion, nobody can see what's happening, and there is a vacuum. And
if you as a member of the advisory committee don't know what's going on, what chance have the rest of us?
I don't think it's been kept from us, frankly. I suspect, unless something's been decided very recently, I think that, you know, there's been a lot of dithering going on within government circles over this, and I don't see why this is so. Can I say there has been action in certain quarters that I think should be applauded. It may not be high profile, but, I mean, there is significant resources going into making the military pensions files available in digital form, a military archive out in Rathmines, which, you know, will mean that a lot of the records of what happened, not just during 1916, but also during the War of Independence, are going to be readily accessible. Work on Kilmainham Courthouse, and there is the plan that you've mentioned around the GPO. There's going to be a kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, an interpretive centre or so forth. That's all in train, and that is all quite good. But as for what is going to happen during the period of Easter, the spring of 2016, I don't know anything, and I don't know that anybody does.
What advice has the advisory committee either been asked for or given in this context?
Well, a lot of what we do is respond to stuff that comes to us, and it's broader than 1916 lists of events and 2014, 2015. But I think the main thing we have said to the government is that there is a need to get a programme out there. The other thing that we have flagged is relatives. And, you know, as somebody who turns up at large public conferences relating to commemoration, I've been struck since 2012 by the number of relatives who are showing up on those occasions. And some of the relatives are people like those that featured on Valerie Cox's report or James Connolly Hearn. In other words, the relatives of the leadership. But there's an awful lot of men and women who are turning up whose relatives were more rank and file figures in the rising. There were something like 1,300 people involved, for example. So that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people who have, you know, tens of thousands of relatives.
Yes, but is it desirable or manageable that relatives would have a say, perhaps a big say, in the arrangements for commemorating 1916?
I think relatives have to be included in this, have to be acknowledged. There is no doubt they wish to be. This is, after all, commemoration of their family. It also, in a sense, provides our last gasp for kind of second-hand connection with the revolutionary generation. And I think that has to be acknowledged. I know that the government, the Department of Arts, are getting emails and letters from all over the world from people claiming connections with 1916 who want to be in Dublin for 2016. So I think there is going to be a requirement to create some form of celebration for these people. Now, there is a list of names, and I'm sure, and James Connolly Hearn would undoubtedly be on it, and so would, I'd say, most of those on your interview, for those who get invited every year to the GPO, and presumably they will get invited to the GPO. But there's an awful lot of other people who cannot fit in the GPO on Easter Sunday 2016. And in a sense, there is need to create some form of engagement with that community. And that's one of the things we have flagged.
What happened in 1966 for the 50th anniversary?
Well, the 50th anniversary, they invited back all the veterans. And it was done at the level of the veterans then, because a lot of the veterans, it was primarily young people's rising. So it was very much the veterans or descendants of the leadership. There was a very big reception in Dublin Castle when, and somebody who was present told me this, that a lot of people who mightn't really have met or spoken because of the Civil War met had a great night, apparently. And then at the end, they all stood and sang the national anthem, and the veterans were evident. They sang it in English.
They're all gone now, of course.
They're all gone now, and in a sense, it's gone into second, third, fourth generations, and the result is, you know, you get, you know, think of your own family, Sean, you know, proliferating family trees. And but there is a strong wish for connectedness with the Rising, and I think it has to be acknowledged in some way or other. I mean, my view is it would probably be a question of Croke Park or somewhere, given the numbers. But there has to be some acknowledgement of that community. I mean, the other point to bear in mind is we're going to have a very long 1916 cycle in 2016 because Easter is early; it's late March. So we'll almost be into commemoration around Patrick's Day, and it always runs up. And I'll say something in a moment, by the way. About
no, you won't, because we're running out of time. I want to go back to you, James Connolly-Heron. What about Croke Park as an alternative to everybody getting into the GPO?
Well, I think it's, I mean, obviously there'd be a question about numbers, but effectively our main concern is there is no programme. Mm-hmm. And that's been verified now by Mary Daly. We need a programme, and then we can discuss the issues around the programme. Without the programme, we're in a vacuum and effectively we're lost. We need a programme to be set up. We need to be involved in the planning of the programme. And out of that, the other issues then will be solved. But we absolutely need a centenary programme, and we need it soon.
And you expect that you'll get some indication, at least of a timescale, this evening when you meet the minister?
Well, there are two issues we'll be discussing with the Minister. One, the future preservation of the Moore Street Battlefield site, and the lack of a centenary programme.
And back briefly to you, and apologies, Mary Daly, for the abrupt exit from from your last contribution. But how quickly do you think, or how soon do you think we need to see an outline programme?
Well, I think we were promised one by the end of June or July. So, and I am talking about 2014.
Yeah, so I suppose maybe the cabinet reshuffle affected things.
It's very possible that is the factor, but it's urgent. Bluntly, even logistics, you know, once you start planning big events like this, you need time.
Okay, well, look, perhaps we'll all be talking about it again in due course and maybe in the not-too-distant future. We'll leave it there for now. Professor Mary Daly of UCD and also James Connolly-Heron, great-grandson of James Connolly, will be talking football tickets after the break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.